Welcome to the Africa Speaking Podcast. The podcast discusses critical issues about the African continent. It is brought to you by Teresa Communications in Nairobi.
Get ready to explore new horizons as we continue with our conversation on climate change adaptation and scaling up community resilience. Welcome to this first episode in our four-part series. I'm your host, Maslin Nyambala, and today we are honored to bring our conversation with Dr. Stalin Kibet. We'll be delving into the crucial intersection of scientific and indigenous knowledge to harness opportunities in climate change adaptation and build resilience within communities. We shall be discussing the Eburu Forest, which is part of the Mau Complex. First and foremost, if you could just introduce yourself and tell us more about yourself, your name, what you do.
Thank you very much, Marceline, for having me to Teresa Communication Studios. My name is Dr. Stalin Kibet. I'm a lecturer at the University of Nairobi, and I have a lot of interest in matters climate change, environment in general, but also because of my training, I have my interests are around socio-ecological issues, socio-ecological systems. And in this case, we want to understand how the people interact with the environment, both for economic reasons, for social, cultural reasons, and any other interests. So that is my space.
Thank you very much. I've learned that you did a project in Eburu Forest with the World Bank in Nakuru County around the Mau Escarpment. Perhaps if you could tell us a little bit about some of the findings.
I think this interest with the Mau complex is a big interest, not only to the country in Kenya, but globally, because as you may be aware, Mau Forest Complex is one of the big water towers in the country. And over time, there's been a lot of challenges that has come as a result of encroachment. So the ecosystem services that are associated with Mau Forest is increasingly being challenged. Mm-hmm. And therefore, there's been a lot of effort by different stakeholders to do something about Mau Forest. And therefore, there's been a lot of efforts by different stakeholders. But this particular one, we've had some work going in Eburu Forest. Mm-hmm. And this particular one was trying to see the conservation of pollinators. Mm-hmm. And the truth about it is that ecosystem service or pollination is one thing that is not always considered when you're mm-hmm. a farmer. And as a farmer, you always want to ask yourself, do you have land? Is there water? Mm-hmm. Is there money to buy inputs like mm-hmm. Fertilizers? But always nobody ever discussed about the issues about pollinators, because mm-hmm. it's always been seen to be a free service.
Yeah.
And therefore, most of the time, people do cultivate crops that require pollination, but they've never factored in that as an input. Mm-hmm. And therefore, having fragments of forest that are so critical, like Eburu, is really very important, because it is the home where the pollinator stays during times when there's off season for crops, because you plant crops like sunflower or fruit plants, they come on seasons. But you ask yourselves, where do the pollinators go when there is no flowers in the farms?
When you say pollinators, what are
pollinators?
You...
I mean things like the bees, the butterflies, the birds. A big group of insects and mammals. But I think in this case, the ones that are very commonly known is like the bees, for example. So you ask yourselves, if there are no crops that are on flowers, where do the bees stay? So having habitats that are conducive for survival of pollinators is so critical. Mm. So in this case, we are looking at fragments that can provide that service. And I think Eburu is one of the areas that are so critical, and other Mau Forest Complex. You can imagine that you're growing crops like mangoes or crops like sunflowers, which are relying 100% on pollination. And you have a plantation of several thousand square kilometers, and there is no natural forest. You can be sure that you're not going to have a good harvest, because we don't have pollinators that we able to do that kind of service.
Okay.
And therefore, Mau Forest and any other forests that are neighboring farms are very critical to provide that service. Other than that, the Mau Forest also apparently has the Buru Forest, but is having, is a home to some of very rare species, bongo.
Yes.
And you probably have heard recently that you received some 17 bongo from that have been raised in the zoo.
Because this bongo is the antelope.
This bongo is only commonly found in forests.
Mm.
So in Kenya, the places, the habitat where bongo had been found naturally is Aberdare, Mount Kenya, and Mau Forest.
Mm.
But at there's some point in time that bongo had already disappeared in Mount Kenya because of poaching. And there's been efforts then to bring it back to this native environment. Apparently, a Buru Forest is one of the existing places that there were still some few bongo animals that are still in their native environment from earlier. And I think the reason why they are there is because of the community in the area who've been able to live, coexist with wildlife harmoniously.
Mm.
And in this case, you're talking about the Alki community. So there was that interest of seeing that this particular animal was one of the animals that are endangered. And everybody wants to ask yourself, why in Mburu and not any other places? Mm-hmm. Mount Kenya is such a big ecosystem. They almost disappeared completely. There were just some very few remaining. So that generated some interest. And the United Nations Environmental Program has been to Mau and trying to check what is happening, what are the challenges. There are people that have half interest also there because of its potential for tourism. And therefore, Mburu became such a very important area for the studies to see what is it that we can learn by from the communities in the area with respect to those other different biodiversity, but also specifically with respect to pollinators, which is such a very important ecosystem service that has never talked much about. So that is why it was necessary to go there, and particularly because of the community there and interest with honey. The Alki community have a very, very strong bond with the bees because of not only as a source of food, but also most everything else revolving their life is based on honey. So cultural rites, you can do gifting honey to the friends. So their life, just like most other communities, also have something that is, their life is revolving around it, you know. So the Alki community, honey is everything about them.
Okay.
You know, so we wanted to understand how is it then maybe learning some few lessons about the Alki community and how they interact with the pollinators and perhaps learn some lessons from them that can be also borrowed to other communities in terms of other ecosystem services, not necessarily for pollination, but that can be a model that can be copied to see, because the communities are the people who can actually make it happen. So that was the purpose.
They will have some indigenous knowledge on how they've been interacting with the pollinators. Maybe you can shed some more light. How are they interacting with the pollinators?
You may be aware that Alki community, some of the be considered to be a hunter-gatherer, although in the recent past they already also do cultivations and keeping livestock. But traditionally, the Alki community have been purely hunter-gatherer community. So they survived on natural resources almost entirely. And one of the biggest of all the things, other than the fruits that they collect, the medicinal plants, the tubers for food and for medicine, is honey. You may also know that even some other communities also that honey has been part of negotiation for dowry and stuff like that. So among the community, the Okie community, the relationship between them and honey and bees is so tight-knit, so tight that you cannot talk about Okie community without mentioning the bees. And therefore, they see bees even as more sacred species to them. And they whatever it is that they do, it makes sure that there is a good environment, a good habitat to make sure that the bees thrive. So sometimes in the way we see them right now is that because of issues of climate change and other things, and everybody's like, but they see these guys knew something from before.
Yeah.
But the Okie communities, they know if we need their life to continue, then you need to make sure that there's enough habitat for the bees. There is enough, you know, bees requires water, they require flowers, they require shade, and all that means that you need a forest. So for you to have a healthy, thriving population of bees, then you need a suitable environment where there's no pollution, there's no forest destruction. And that's why the whole idea of bees is driving that the Okie community must, as of necessity, have forest, because then that way they are sure that they can get the honey and they can get other services that revolve for their own cultural purposes. So no honey, no cultural identity, no food. But of course, right now, because of changes that has happened in the lifestyle of the community, people are now increasing to go into farming. Now pollination also become critical in that space. So the Okie community, like if you talk of Maasai community and the cows, for example, is exactly the same. It's so tightly knit that the bees to Okie is like the cattle to Maasai. It is something that you cannot detach from them.
Yes.
So that is the relationship that they derive sort of sacredness around the issues of, their life is just around there.
Okay.
So they do protect the forest.
Yes.
So that there is home for the bees, so that there is food for them, and there's all those other things that comes as a result of the honey.
Basically, the whole of the region around Nakuru, what are some of the community activities that are now taking place that are contributing to issues to do with climate change emissions? And what are the natural resources? What are some of the natural resources that are dominant and are in Nakuru, and some of the activities that are being impacted by human activities, community activities that are contributing to climate change? I know there are many, you can just name some of the critical ones.
It's a very mouthful question, that one. As you may know, that it's not so easy for many people, especially ordinary people, to define what climate change is. But they can be able to tell you something about the impacts that they have as because of the climate change. Things like drought, that there's already scarcity of pastures and water for especially pastoral communities. There is outbreaks of pests and diseases. This is another impact or the hazards associated with climate change. High temperatures, so you could have heat waves, although in Kenya we don't have heat waves, but in other places it's really a big problem. Things like loss of biodiversity. So all those hazards associated with climate change is actually the things that communities themselves start to see, oh, this is climate change for real affecting me. Nakuru County is very ecologically diverse. So we have about 11 sub-counties, and they're all coming from very high areas, about 2,700 meters above sea level to as low as 900 meters above sea level. So places like Naivasha, like Nakuru. And because of that long elevation, so the livelihood also is slightly different in different zones. So if you talk about the 2,700 meters above sea level, so we're talking about areas like Kuresoi, north and south, some parts of Sumukia, Sub-County. These are areas that even people are actually growing tea. They have other crops, the wheat is on the slightly low, so there's maize, beans, and all that kind of stuff. And then you have this area also has a lot of rainfall there in those places. So you have middle places like Mol, Rongai, Bahati, which is the rainfall is not that very little, but middle, in the middle. And then you have the low areas that could consider to be semi-arid, that is areas of Naivasha, Gilgil. So those that diverse is that they have different things that people do. So let's start from the low areas, the Naivasha, Gilgil area. The activities that are very dominant there, we have flower farms. Okay, from the lake itself, in Lake Naivasha, there's fishing. Yeah. And the fishing, of course, meaning that, of course, it's regulated.
Yeah.
People rely on the inflow of water from Malewa River and some parts of forest rivers coming from Eburu. Mm. So the fishing is the main activity down there. Yeah. And perhaps some of the things that are challenges that people are doing there is that there is cases of overfishing.
Overfishing.
And then if you leave the lake into the flower farms, there's been cases that are people talk about pollution because of agrochemicals that are used in the flower farms. So there's been an issue to say that the cultivation of flower farms, there are a lot of it because of it's very intense in terms of chemical use. Of course, they've been some efforts to make sure that there is control in terms of how much chemicals are being used so that it reduces pollution. So pollution is an area of concern. Of course, there's also irrigation farms that are not necessarily the flower farms. There's also irrigation farms around Lake Naivasha, Lake Elementaita. And those ones also because irrigations, a lot of those irrigations are using the very traditional furrow irrigations. And the use of agrochemicals also makes it really source of pollution. So that's what happened on that low end. In the middle zones, of course, where people growing the wheat and the barley, although not much chemicals are being used there. You also have, of course, the cases of soil erosions in some of the places. Up in the Mount Mau forest there, for the longest, at least now in the last few years is when things have changed. There's been a lot of destruction of the forest. Deforestation has been such a big, big problem there. And of course, we all understand that forests are very critical for carbon sinks, carbon sequestration. And therefore, the destruction of forests is exacerbating the challenges associated with climate change. So there is a problem of deforestation, there's issues of degradations, like soil erosions, and issues of pollution is also another problem that is happening in the county. There is also the waste management in the town. So for the longest time, Lake Nakuru, has been said to be very polluted at some point because of the waste that comes from the town. So those are some of the things that are contributing towards the climate change.
Climate issues,
yeah. And I think there's been some efforts to do to do intervention in those various places. And I think, for example, in the flower farms, most of the flower farms now are certified and various either Fair Trade or Rainforest Alliance. And one of the requirements is that your activities must not pollute the environment. So for them to sell their products into the external market, then they need to have that certificate. So there are good efforts now by flower farms to make sure that they can prove, they can show indeed that they are not releasing any forms of pollution into the Lake Naivasha and or any other place for that case. For areas that people are now having challenges of degradations, so there's also efforts that are being done along the issues of agroforestry, especially among the small-scale farmers. And those are the areas that so reforestation, agroforestry, and reforestation in areas that previously used to be our forest, like in Mau, where there's been really big efforts to bring back forest into there. So those are some of the efforts that are either done by communities on their own or done by communities with support from stakeholders or partners or national government or county government. Or sometimes they are actually working together in different... Like the Mau forest, reforestation has been one major successful case. We hope that it will go
successful in terms of collaboration between
various stakeholders,
national, private sector,
civil society, UN bodies. There's been a lot of many stakeholders that have worked around Mau, trying to bring sanity, if you could say. Because there's been serious erosion or degradation of deforestation in Mau forest. And therefore, there's been a lot of efforts to bring it back. And because of it's such a critical ecosystem, you already know it's a source of so many rivers into different places. There's a water tower. So there are different things that are being done in different places. But I can tell you now places that some cases have become, like agroforestry has become one of the things that many households are trying to adopt to make sure that they have enough fuel wood in their own homestead. Some of the agroforest trees are also fruit trees. So they're also diversifying their production system to make sure that they can get a little bit more income from other places so that you don't go to the forest. So there are those efforts that are trying to to be done to in way of building resilience of communities and mitigate the climate change. But also the things like tree planting, for example, has both mitigation, but also it helps the communities also in adaptation. So the, in Nakuru, there are different things happening because of the various agroecological zones that you can see, from very low areas where there's very semi-arid to areas with much rainfall.
Much rainfall.
Yes.
Very varied.
Yeah. So the interventions are different.
Interventions are different.
Yeah. And the challenges are also different a little bit. Yes.
That wraps up the first insightful episode of our four-part series with the knowledgeable Dr. Stanley Kibet. Join me, Maslin Nyambala, for the next part of our exploration. It's been a pleasure hosting you.
Thank you for listening to the Africa Speaking Podcast. Join us in our next episode, brought to you by Twiza Communications in partnership with Forum Sieve. For any comments and views, you can reach us through our website, www.africaspeaking.org. You can also reach us on Facebook, Twiza Communications, or on our X handle, @twizacoms. You can also write to us on email, info@africaspeaking.org.